action, some of our basic needs as well. So keep doing that. I'll be here, back here next week for another episode of Good Medicine. We'll have more music from Native American creative natives and more information on events that are going on through the rest of American Indian Heritage Month. Okay, here we go. We're ending up now with the Edwin Hawkins Singers and Oh Happy Day. Let's remember that. Happy days are ahead for us. Okay. Love you, Nora. All right. It is 7:01 here in the Twin Cities. It's now Central Standard Time. I forgot about that. Okay. Oh, I just lost the temperature, so it must be perfect outside. Get out and drink some apple cider, sit in front of a bonfire, maybe roast some marshmallows, make some s'mores, and tune in now as we get ready to join Native Roots Radio Live, the best of, not live, but the best of, with Wukunja Hade, Robert Pilot. You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM HD1 in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and streaming around Turtle Island at KFAI.org. We are non-commercial, community-powered radio. Support for this program comes from KFAI listener members and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Programming on KFAI is made possible in part through grants from the state of Minnesota and listeners just like you.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
What's up? This is Toolman.
And this is Bear Witness.
And we are the Hallucination.
And you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, Best Of.
The Hallucination.
Good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, any cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wukunja Hade.
Cudahy to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We discuss local and national Native news and events, and as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
You're absolutely right, Dega. This portion of the show is supported by Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon. Support honest Native news from Natives themselves. Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon.
Oh, in Pini Gigi to all you guys that donate monthly. We really, really appreciate that. Hey, we got a special guest here. It's George McCauley, and we're going to talk about a few things, but I wanted just to give a quick overview of George. George has been a family friend for many years, a big softball player in his day, an athlete, and, you know, he's been involved with ICWA. And all of the Native community know and love George, but I also know George has been, for us here, a voice actor over the years and also an actor. And I think that's, George, why we got you on. We want to talk about your experience with the Killers of the Flower Moon. Welcome.
Hello, Robert, nephew, and Haley. I'm happy to be here today, and it's an awesome day, and I appreciate you having my opinion, and I really enjoy the show, and you guys do some awesome work, so continue the good work.
Yeah, we really appreciate that and appreciate all the work that you and your family do. And we were at an awesome powwow this last weekend, and you had some great pictures out there of the powwow, and I as an adoptee really appreciate the work you and your wife have been doing these past many, many years.
Yeah, the adoptee power and gatherings that she has, it's a lot of healing for our relatives who have found their way home and the ones who are still looking. So it's an awesome job that you're part of it and being able to support it. And so thank you for that.
Yeah, well, I just got to jump in. And story that makes me cry every time is that sister that came from Colorado, met her birth sister, older sister, for the first time ever. Those are the kind of things that happen during this.
That was powerful. That was really powerful. The whole day was like that. I mean, it just went by so fast. All the good feelings that was going on through the day and into the evening. And we look forward to doing that again.
All right, so let's jump into it. I've seen a couple of your posts, and I really think that's a really good idea now to shake this out. There seems to be a lot of we never run out of things to talk about in Indian country. And, you know, we have this blockbuster movie. I know they've made a lot of money. They're up to like $40 million in the last couple of weeks. And then we have people like, I mean, help us all, but we always have news going on. And we had like Buffy St. Marie and that whole shenanigans and that coming up. But let's talk about you are in the Killers of the Flower Moon. And let's talk about a little bit about your experience and also your take on the final product.
Okay. I was wanted to be in a movie, like a major motion picture. And I have auditions through the years. I went to Santa Fe when I had some auditions. They said they needed Indian actors. And so I flew down there, and man, all these beautiful Indians all in line, hundreds of them. And they didn't say what the movie was, but they took our picture, was about it. And it was Hostiles. And even from that movie, you could see there weren't that many Indians. And the main actors, Adam Beach and Wes Studi, you know, were the lead roles, and a few other Indians. And I said, man, if I knew that, I wouldn't even came down here, because, you know, chances like that, it's hard to get in. It's hard to get into acting or get any kind of roles anyway. So I went home then. I don't know how much longer they were looking for actors for Killers of the Flower Moon, a movie that was going to be filmed in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. I thought about it. I said, oh, man, that's another long ways to go. And first they're looking for Osage members, and then later on they wanted any Native person to come down there. So my wife said, well, if you don't try, you won't find out.
Yeah.
So I drove down to Tulsa, and man, it was I got there at night. Next morning they're supposed to start at 11, so got up early, went and had breakfast, and I got there about 10 o'clock saying, well, I better get here early so I can get out early and I can get on the way home.
Mm-hmm.
But I got down to the main room and they give a form to fill out, and I was number 1,724. There were that many people lined up in front of me just to get in. And I thought, again, I don't know if this is worth it, but I stayed there and got through the line about noon, and they asked you all these, they did enter your name in a computer database, and then they took your picture. What was really cool is that they were serious about casting Indians. And I thought, okay, man, this is going to be good, because there are a lot of white people in there all trying to get in. And then once they took your picture and gave you a form filled out, they send you to another room to get fitted for clothes. And all the Indians are going that direction. All the white people are going out the door. So I said, all right, we're going to do this. And so they got our clothing size. They then you go to another room and read some lines with somebody who came in. And then after that, it took you to another part of the area, and they videotaped you asking you questions and getting their voice. And that lady asked me, said, oh, where are you from? I said, I live in Minneapolis. And said, you came all the way down here? I said, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you hear that? I said, well, I'm not. So, and so then after that, they kind of, because of COVID, it kind of died down. And so we didn't, you know, I didn't hear nothing. So I didn't know what was going to happen. And then early of that year, when I just started, I think it was 2020, I can't remember what year, but somebody called me and said, if I was still interested and if I'd cut my hair. And I said, no, I said, well, we're going to start in April. And if you want to, you know, we'll notify you when you're going to be coming down. So I really was, man, I was so excited and thinking, man, this is going to be cool. But it's, again, it's like when you play bingo, you're happy to win, but this was a jackpot. I mean, nothing was going to be better than a Scorsese film that was $200 million and a lot of Indian actors. And it was just that, man, to get on the where they were filming. All these beautiful Indian people that, you know, we had to make sure that the clothing we wore, they made sure that was for that time of the century or decade that the Indian people, that the Osage murders happened. They used pictures of people from that era because of the money they made. A lot of people had cameras and took pictures, so they knew what kind of clothing they wore. So they stuck to that and made sure that it was all original.
Mm-hmm.
Go on set, and then there'd be like, I counted maybe sometimes 100 to 300-400 Indian extras that they had to braid our hair and make sure our clothing was all looking professional, and then go on set, and then they'd set up the scenes. And sometimes, like, if the racing scene, the car scene, that one took a whole day.
Right.
And they, you know, they race some cars, got people walking cars, and they had to set it all up again. They looked through their little cameras, about 20 people checking out the scene or anything to make sure that everything was correct. So it was an awesome experience to really be part of that. And I really, really enjoyed that.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the film after it came out. But did you have to join SAG? Did you to be an extra? Or is that a different union?
I've never been a member of SAG, and I just was happy to be part of it. And the extras, I don't know if we were SAG, if you got paid more or not, but we were paid average about $100 a day.
Cool. Hey, George, we're going to take a quick break, and we're with George McCauley, Killers of the Flower Moon extra, talking about his experience and his expectations. And we'll have more right after this short break. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake.
Stay with us.
Hey. To our elders who teach us of our creation and our past, so we may preserve Mother Earth for ancestors yet to come, we are the land.
This is dedicated to our relatives before us, thousands of years ago, and to the 150 million who were exterminated across the Western Hemisphere in the first 400 years' time.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Those guys are awesome. They've been with us for 7 years, and we really appreciate their support, and we love supporting them. Hey, we're here with George McCauley, and George was an extra in The Killers of the Flower Moon, the movie, and we're talking about his experience, and we kind of left off where you were at the one-day shoot of the car race that you were in. What other scenes can we, by the way, welcome back, and I'm wondering what other scenes could we look for you in there, way in the back there or over there?
There was I was down there for first, I went there twice. First time I was there for 15 days.
Whoa.
Then they called me back and the wedding scene, which was another 4 days. But I just saw the movie when it came out the first day on a Thursday. And man, I was just so disappointed.
Oh.
Because all the different scenes that all these Native people were in, you know, so many beautiful looking people that they really looking sharp and really doing different things, that there's just flashes. Like, I think I caught myself in three scenes just for a quick second. Mm. And there's so many other people that were really striking that, you know, covered the different, and they were covering different background scenes and mm-hmm. close-ups and I was disappointed that I didn't see any of that, especially in the wedding scene, man. That wedding scene was awesome. All them beautiful Osage women in their wedding outfits and what they meant to them and the reason they wore those. And I didn't see none of that on the film.
You're right. The wedding scene in particular was pretty short. It seemed like the way they shot it, it was as if they were being pictures being taken. So they're as stills, and it was like really quick editing.
Exactly. I mean, same thing with, I was in a funeral scene and it was hot. It was a long day and had a whole bunch of extras sitting all over. And when I seen in a movie, might've been a different funeral scene, but the different things that happen that the Osage relatives do, you can see some things that we're doing, but nobody had any explanation. No Osage people were talking about what was going on. No Osage people seemed to have any dialogue. And that was really disappointing that none of their things that they live, their ways, were not talked about.
So do you think, you know, I always joke when we talk about Dancing with the Wolves, and I kind of say it's Dancing with Kevin Costner. Did you get that kind of vibe after you watched the show, that it was more about the white stars in this movie and not so much a representation of the Osage people?
That's exactly was my feeling. And I thought after I saw it, it was like De Niro and DiCaprio in for performing for an Oscar. I mean, we know what they can do. We've seen other movies where they performed or didn't know how they act, and we know how it's going to be. And that's what I seen mostly on the screen. And Lily, the one who played Capra's wife, man, I thought she was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah,
Native people don't have that kind of screen time, and as much as she was able to get, which wasn't much compared to the other two. I mean, it's a 2.5 hour movie.
And 3.5.
5 minutes of the dialogue to do other things of what the Osage people really exemplifies of how they were.
Yeah, it's just to correct you, and I don't like doing that to my elders, but it was a 3.5-hour movie. And I feel again, we get into this where people are telling our stories and they become their stories, and then they become the stars of our stories. And, you know, the person who wrote the book was white. Of course, the people that produced this and directed it and starred in this are white. So, again, we get back into Dancing with Kevin Costner.
Yeah. And I don't know if Scorsese had anything to do with the editing, but the editing, but they needed a native person, an Osage person in there doing that work, because you think about the money, the time and energy they spent to get this movie made, but it didn't come across as how we as native people would have liked to have seen how our relatives were treated, how they, you know, even their lifestyles. And if it would have been really cool if they would at least listed all the actors, Indian extras in the credits, man. There's so many of them from different parts of Oklahoma. Mostly, I think I may be one of the few who are out of state. There's almost every tribe representative who are extras in that movie.
That's amazing. One of the things, too, that really made me rethink the movie after I saw it was that young actor from Reservation Dogs, at the day of the opening, did a TikTok, or not a TikTok, but an X, which used to be that little bird, tweet on how she was so disappointed, because when it did represent Native Americans, it represented them in trauma, in murders. Right away, in the beginning of the movie, we see our brothers and sisters, and mostly our sisters, being murdered. And that's just a major trigger. And she had a lot to say about that.
Yeah, it is so true that the way that this movie went was not happy. Many of our relatives are not happy with what the final product was. And especially that what you just mentioned is a trigger, and many of them other triggers that people have maybe been brought up because of the movie. And really, you know, it hasn't been any different than any other movie. All the money and time. I mean, just Scorsese did the right thing. He went to the Osage people. He talked to them. He listened to them. And he shared a meal with them. And he brought, you know, things that they wanted to have done correctly. And maybe he did a couple of things, but not more than, you know, he could have done. Mm-hmm. So it's really that's what is hard for me, and disappointing that how it turned out.
Haley, you just saw the movie recently too.
I did.
What are your feelings about this? It's, you know, as a young person, young Native person, what are your feelings?
Yeah. Well, thank you for asking. Yeah, so I just actually saw Killers of the Flower Moon this past Friday. And yeah, I completely agree. The whole murders happening right off the bat. I mean, within the first 5 minutes, really, we see I think three I counted. I could be mistaken, but yeah, I would say that's quite a bit of a trigger, especially coming right off the bat, opening up the movie like that. I know I personally had food. I ordered food, and I seriously didn't touch my food the whole time after that. And I couldn't eat. And, you know, respectfully, I was probably the only Native in the theater, which is fine, but I was also the only one who was emotional and crying. And I was surrounded by people with no reaction, and it was hard. It was really hard.
Yeah. So, you know, there is this narrative again that George, that we don't get to tell our own stories, and we know storytellers, we know actors. Minnesota is full of Native actors, and I mean, Reservation Dogs is doing it right, and has done it right, and we just have to push forward. It's a sad deal, but I agree with you.
Yeah, it's how, you know, not only with that, but as you mentioned, like the incident with Buffy St. Marie, and right, a lot of our artists that do awesome work that don't get the opportunity or the way they want to do it and be recognized for it. There's always like a white person always getting in there somehow, doing this and saying they honor us, like the different statues that I know of they built. I mean, they made, like, there's one in Nebraska for the Ponca chief, and it's always the white guy who makes them. And he says, oh, well, I have this guy helping me, and we need our own people in the front. And that's where they have to be. That's where they need to be in order for the story to be told how it needs to be told.
You know, what's really cool, too, about a lot of people that listen to this show, there are what I like to call white allies. And, you know, we just always, they're very respectful, and they need, and it's great that we have this show, because we don't appreciate the white savior thing. We've been here 10,000 years as Ho-Chunks, and we've been here for a long time, and we're still here, and we can tell our own stories, and we do tell our own stories. So I just got to give a shout out to the people that are respectful, that do ask the right questions, and it's great for us to bring up this this other point. And I really appreciate you speaking your truth, George.
You're right about that. I mean, I agree with you completely. There are people who really understand, and they don't try to be Indian, but they're here to support us. And I know just recently, about when a movie came out, was that, man, a lot of the non-Indian people don't know about how we're still here.
Right.
And a lot of the friends of my wife's that she went to school would say, oh, what's the movie about? I never heard of this movie. So they're still out there not knowing, you know, so many of them that we're here to, we're knocking at the door. We've been knocking a long time.
Yeah. When we're knocking it over, like Uncle Clyde used to say. Oh, yeah. Good. George, thank you so much for stopping in and speaking your truth. We got to have you on more often, and really appreciate all the work you've done and have been doing in the community all these years. And thanks again for being on.
Well, thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Right on. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
KFAI is a proud sponsor of the Landmark Live Concert Series, showcasing the finest women in folk roots and Americana music at St. Paul's historic Landmark Center.
The next concert is Friday, November 15th, with the all-female band, the Foxgloves.
A little bit of country, a little bit of folk, a little bit of classical, and a whole lot of heart. The Foxgloves' engaging presence, rich instrumentation, compelling storytelling songwriting, three-part harmonies, and creatively reimagined covers render them a force to be reckoned with.
The concert begins at 7:30 p.m. and is preceded by a cocktail hour at 6:45, where you can meet the artists and KFAI DJs.
Tickets and more information available at landmarkcenter.org.
Remember that batteries, paint, weed killer, and other household chemicals don't belong in the trash. Bring items like these to Ramsey County's Household Hazardous Waste Collection sites. It's free. For more information, visit ramseyrecycles.com/HHW or call 651-633-3279. That's 651-633-3279.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Development Institute, or NACDI, in Minneapolis.
Hey, we are here with Roya Taylor, a host of Good Medicine on KFAI, and we want her to give us a little update of what's happening here. And, you know, did you get out and vote yet, Roya?
Oh, yes, it did. But, you know, we didn't have as many. Well, we had city council over here in Minneapolis, but I can't even remember now. You know, when they have those two sides to a ballot, it's always confusing, so. Well, Han, in Carajitol, your relatives, my relatives out there across Minnesota and Turtle Island, all of them that listen to you every week faithfully. So it's great to be here, Haley and Robert.
Right on. Hey, and we love having you on. It's a little early this week. We usually have you on Thursdays, but I'm boogieing on the plane. So we got some good shows coming up this week that we've already done. So it's great that you can spend some time with us and talk about maybe a little bit of what's happening this weekend and in the theater and arts realm here on Turtle Island. And I want to ask you this before we move on. I've talked a little bit about this the last couple days. I did get a chance to watch the CBC documentary on Buffy St. Marie, and oh my god, oh my god is all I have to say.
Well, you and I have talked about this, and we've been trying to come to some conclusion ourselves, and you know, along with other people, and I think everybody's, you know, taking their time and just you know, making an informed decision before they say something. And in fact, I'm glad you mentioned that though, Robert, because I know we were both kind of hesitating, just taking our time. I am on Friday night on Good Medicine on KFEI, Fresh Air Community Radio. I'm going to go ahead and open up the lines into the studio, Studio Four Directions, and let the local Native community just weigh in on that. You know, it's not an opportunity for people to go on or to attack necessarily Buffy or the family that's adopted her, but I think there's a lot of good comments and conclusions that local folks have been making about Pretendians, about the opportunities lost by so many other Native artists because of taking up space you know, by these folks who say that they're Native, and then we find out that they're not. But this one is a very special case, as we all know. So that's going to be at 6 o'clock this coming Friday on Good Medicine, KFEI Fresh Air Radio, 90.3 FM HD, and streaming at kfai.org. So I'll be posting the telephone number into the studio. I don't want to do it now because people might start calling in, or our poor other hosts might have to start fielding these calls. So, but it'll be from 7 p.m.
Exactly. It's a hard one with her, but if you watch that documentary, it's pretty cut and dry for me now. But I think people have a lot of emotional attachment to her over the years because of the work she has done in a good way as being a Pretendian.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I was trying to listen to some of the Native American calling today on Kahanic Broadcasting out of Albuquerque. They had Dr. Kim Tallbear, she's actually a Native American from Lower 48, but she now lives and resides up in across the Medicine Treaty Line up in Canada. She's a professor at one of the universities up there. And so she had some good comments sort of generally about the whole phenomenon, not just necessarily Buffy and and the people that have supported her, the people who have decried what is going on. So I would encourage others to take a look at that as well, or listen to that, I should say.
Well, it's funny. We're going to have on Thursday George McCauley on, and one of the things he said when he was – could you hear me?
Yes. I said Omaha, the great Omaha nation. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And one of the things that he said was really interesting is he was 2 hours early for the call in for the movie he was in. And
Killers
there was
of the Flower Moon.
Thank you. Killers of the Flower Moon. Thank you, Haley. What would I do without you? Because, you know, Bobby P's got a good memory, but it's short. And what he said was really interesting is they had two lines. And one of the lines would go to the dressing room and get the clothes and get them sewed up. And the other were the white people that were pretending to be Indians just went away. And they sent them away. So there's still a lot of Pretendians out there that want to be in movies and pretend they're us, but they don't want our trauma, Roya.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, you know, it's a lived experience. I've always said, I've told my children, and I know you have too, you schooled your children well, that, you know, hey, I've been doing this Indian thing for about a half a century. So I think I have kind of got a little idea what it's about. I think I've got it down a little. So these other people who are sort of coming at it very late with some specious reality or backstories, you know, as we say in theater, you know, it just you can kind of begin to see where fantasy or where reality ends and fantasy begins.
Well, in the beginning of my show, too, it's really funny. Thomas told a story in Smoke Signals, and one of the stories was, you know, everybody wanted to be Indian, you know, in the 60s, you know, with the long hair and the headbands and all those things and the frilled jackets. But they, again, don't want the trauma. They want to appropriate.
Sure. Or the commitment, you know, the spiritual commitment.
Right.
My dad used to say, "Hey, you know, it's sort of a spiritual undertaking to be a native person, an Indian," or he would say Indian. He said, "We're kind of like the Marines," because he was a former Marine. You know, it's like the Marine Corps. You know, it's the smallest of all the military units in the U.S. military, and so, you know, God didn't make a lot of Marines. He said, just like He didn't make a lot of Indians. You know,
so. Wow, that's a good point. And, yeah, I just, it's just hard. I don't know if you remember this, Roya, but when I was first on, I had somebody on the show who said that she was Native American and, she was not and was outed on Facebook. And, we don't talk much about that, but that was 7 years ago. And the person had really good information and we were talking a lot about Standing Rock then and always had an update. But people are like, well, who is this person? And we had to ask, and she couldn't say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's, you know, I'm going to talk about that on Friday night. It's very complex, and I don't mean to complicate it more, but we have a lot of folks, particularly up in Canada, who are part of the Scoop generation, and so they don't really know. And Canadian government and missionary societies, residential boarding schools, took great effort to hide their backgrounds, their connection back to their families and to their people. So I have a little sympathy there, but when somebody turns around and uses something that's concocted just to make money off of it, and even, you know, has a chance to, as somebody said today, if they would just confess after they've been found out. But those people who double down, it's very disturbing. So no matter who they are.
It's funny too, Roya is, and again, we're here with Roya, host of Good Medicine on KFAI, and I think we're just talking about this Buffy. And the thing is, I want to say is, you could take a DNA test at Ancestry.com or any one of these things. And what I did years ago, and I found out a lot of people that I know personally that are Ho-Chunk are related to me. Because there's a reason behind that. I mean, we're up to 9,000 citizens of Ho-Chunk out of Wisconsin and across the world, but we were down to 700 people at one time. Oh. And everyone was related to everyone at one time or another way back.
Right. A lot of snagging going on.
Yeah. Well, and prior to that, genocide.
Yeah.
Not to mention. But everyone wants to know, Roya, when we're going to do our Sonny and Cher show again.
Oh, whenever you want to, whenever you get us booked there. We're appearing in Vegas first, and we'll be back here sometime soon. So, yeah. Hey, Robert, I got a couple of items here I want to share with you before we have to sign off. But thanks again for having me on. You know, some of these, I don't think I'll mention what was coming up earlier, or I think it's Thursday, because I already talked about that over at the Historical Society and the MIA, but there are some great events. And one of them involves somebody that you and I know, that she's been on your program for a couple of times in the past. And that's Angie Vig, along with her husband, Ted Vig. They're wonderful people. They have Vig guitars over on Snelling Avenue in St. Paul for all our local listeners here. They have a band, their own band called Bad Lucky. And that's going to be, they're going to be at the Schooner Tavern over here in Minneapolis, 2901 27th Avenue South on Saturday night. And they're going to be dropping a few new songs as well. So that's Angie, but she's White Earth, right? I think.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and she plays guitar, and I think she also fronts for them as a as one of their vocalists. And then second, on Sunday morning, the following day, 2 p.m., we're going to have Shelley Nero, Mohawk, who's going to be in town. She's part of this In Our Hands photography exhibit. She's got a long career. She's going to talk about that. And she produced a film years ago called The Year of Mitzi Bearclaw. It's won a lot of awards. It's very humorous, but also poignant as well, kind of talking about these same issues about how Native people identify themselves. And then on Tuesday, the 14th, that's next Tuesday, from 6 to 7:30 p.m., over at, it's the Mississippi River Market Co-op over on 7th Street. I'll give you the exact address, 740 East 7th Street. There's an ongoing series called the Indigenous Peoples Month Class Series with Gabby Manoman and Jenna Gray Eagle. They're going to be talking about healthy foods and Native sovereignty when it comes to foods.
Hey, Roya, of host of Good Medicine on KFAI. Pini Gigi for stopping in and having a great conversation.
Yeah, Pini Gigi to you. Yeah, I'll see you later at the 49.
Okay. We'll be right back with Bob Blake from Red Lake. I always like to say that.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon. Support honest Native news from Natives themselves. Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon.
Hey, we have Robert Blake on, a Solar Bear with the Solar News, and it's election night, so we probably are talking a little bit about a lot of stuff today, and along with this report. And I see your lighting's kind of like Captain Kurtz again here from Apocalypse Now. Just kidding. Robert's laughing, but he's muted, but he thought that was funny, too.
Yeah, no, you know what? I just realized that we're an hour behind now, right? We're it's daylight savings time, and so the sun
just realized that
the sun is not coming through my window now. And every time I come on the radio with you guys, I have the window open with the sun coming in, and so that's the thing. That's the reason.
Well, wow. You know, can you guys believe that we're already at daylight savings time and election day is here today, you know, Dega?
Well, what I can't believe is that I'm 62 and I roughly got about 16 more of these daylight saving times to go through my lifetime. So I'm really enjoying this one, even though I'm looking out the window and I can't see anything.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so we're coming up on the end of the year here. You know, we're around a lot of people, our friends and our relatives, especially during the holidays coming up.
And a lot of times they're not the same people, friends and relatives. Oh, wow.
Good one. But you know, lots of germs floating around. We got to, you know, make sure we're washing our hands and taking our COVID tests and all that good stuff. But you know, especially you don't want to find yourself without health insurance going into the new year. So, you know, I'm lucky we live in a state of Minnesota here and where we have really great resources such as MinSure. You know, MinSure has our backs when it comes to health insurance. And, you know, MinSure is our ally. They don't work against us. They work for us and with us, connecting us with experts. who guide us through that whole process. And the insurance process can be tricky. You might not always know what you're doing. So if you need that resource, I suggest heading out to minsure.org to find affordable plans that help fit your needs.
Well, I know when this came up a few years ago, it was very important, and it was very, MinSure was on top of it, where they really helped people sign up, and it was a big, big deal. And it is a big deal. You don't want to be running around without insurance. So MinSure is the place to go.
And I mean, now some states too, right? Like, I mean, they don't offer state plans, you know? So, I mean, this is nice that, you know, the state of Minnesota does have that for its, you know, citizens that don't have a traditional plan with, say, an employer, right?
Right. Right. Exactly. And we could talk on and on about insurance, but it's so important. I mean, it just is. And so everyone get out there, and it's getting that time of year, and do some MinSure. Robert, the elections, I know you ran for city council. We have a big city council race here in the Twin Cities, St. Paul. In my district, we have two people that are kind of the front runners, and because the last city council, Tolbert, is retiring. So it's important. Talk to us about how important it is to be city council and all the decisions that they make or may not make.
You know, I think we always like imagine like the important race is the presidency, right? Like everybody gets wrapped up in that. And, you know, it's kind of like we all kind of think like, all right, I did my civic duty. I voted for the president. And these years that we don't, you know, that we don't vote for the president, you know, like we don't really think it matters. But people out there, these are the years that really do matter. And it's really because you have a lot of these elections that, you know, are going to affect you personally, like city council member elections. And, you know, and what I'm really hoping for, and there really is a lot of new folks that are going to be running for office. And, you know, I mean, and let's also be honest too, Robert, the last, like, you know, I mean, the last, what's to say, couple of years here, I mean, let's hand it to these city officials who, I mean, everything that's happened in our wonderful city has really taken a toll on them, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't blame, you know, a lot of these individuals that are retiring from the city council. Like, I think in St. Paul, we're going to have like half of it. So over half is going to be brand new, you know?
I'm going to miss Jane Prince too. Jane's had her as her son as a student, and truth be told, years ago when I had my own video production business, do you remember Andy Dawkins?
Andy Dawkins. I remember Andy Dawkins.
He was Andy Dawkins' campaign manager for mayor. And I did a lot of work for them. And it's so funny now, she's been a city council member for many, many years and a good friend, and a good friend of Natives.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, you know, you think a lot about these folks that are retiring, but I'm telling you, Robert, I really do believe that the last couple of years have really taken a toll on these city council members and their service to both Minneapolis and St. Paul. I mean, there was so many important decisions, you know, that had to be made. And I think that's a really wonderful example too, to everybody out there that's listening, that that's why these races are important. And just because they're not in a presidential year, that they really do matter. And we really have to do and exercise our civic duty and go out and vote and be a part and let our voices be heard, because a lot of the decisions that are going to affect you personally in your community is going to be made by these people, you know?
Right. Exactly. And, you know, like you were saying, it's been a hard couple of years, especially with housing and how unaffordable it is for most people. And then what happens is then you bring apartment buildings in neighborhoods and neighborhoods into apartment buildings and just things like that that have to be weighed out in a good way.
Well, yeah. And you know, it's so interesting, you know, Saturday I had coffee with a Coleman, one of the family members. I met Coleman, and you know, his brother, you know, was the mayor of St. Paul at one time, and you know, his brother's Nick, you know, who wrote for the Pioneer Press for a long time, right. So and we were just talking, you know, about the housing issue on Saturday, and you know how, you know, there's so many things that I think that we can do to make housing affordable. But when you look at suburbs, like let's just take for instance, Woodbury, where, you know, the home out there is $800,000 or something. I don't know what it is. It's ridiculous. But you look at that and I mean, that's literally like, that's going to keep out a lot of people, you know? Right. And so, I mean, how do we make sure that housing is fair, it's equitable. We're not drawing these imaginary lines like we used to before, right? And let's be honest. I mean, I'm meeting people now that are moving from different states that apparently there was an article out there that coming back to climate change now, that one of the biggest, mm-hmm. one of the best places to live in the future is going to be Minnesota. Because right. of climate change. And as a matter of fact, in a project that I was doing with the University of Minnesota, one of the people there was from Houston, Texas. And she said that she saw that same article and it said Duluth, Minnesota was going to be the place to move, actually. But okay. her family got as far as the Twin Cities and said, I think we're going to set down roots here. You know, I mean, this is real. I think a lot of people are going to be migrating from these different areas. And, you know, I think Minnesota is going to have to really think about, okay, how do we manage this influx of people that are moving here? And let's be honest. I mean, we've got one of the better economies in the Midwest here in the Twin Cities, you know, with all of our Fortune 500 companies, our educational institutions. And Robert, let's not forget that we're one of the only probably metropolitan areas that can afford to have all of our sports teams have their own stadium. Like you don't see that, you know? And so when we think about that, I mean, we have folks that want to live here and be a part of this. And so like, how do we make housing more affordable? You're absolutely correct, Robert.
Well, what's interesting too, Robert, not only the climate change in that article, but laws that are being passed around the country too against our trans friends and families are moving here for that reason too, because we are a haven here for LGBT people and everybody. So it's a climate, but it's also we're a blue state right now, and that laws against our relatives that are against them in other states are coming here.
Well, and I think too, Robert, like, you know, let's be honest, everything that happened in the last, you know, couple of years in this state, right? I mean, with everything that happened, you know, with, you know, the horrible situation with, you know, George Floyd and everything. And I mean, we were really able to see that we were like number two in race disparity or that black and white. And it's like, you know, as a Minnesotan, I don't want to be, you know, known for our state, because I love our state. I love our community here. And I don't want that to be something that, you know, is a part of who we are. And I know for a fact that's not who we are. And so when you see those statistics, I mean, we have a lot of work to do. Here in the state, you know, and so I want people to say, wow, this is the number one state for, you know, that, you know, for BIPOC communities and, you know, and also, you know, that gap is so small that we're number one in the country, right? And yeah. I think the best way that we do that, Robert, is by investing heavily and supporting, you know, BIPOC communities through this energy transition. That's what I firmly believe, Robert.
Well, let's talk more about that after this short break. We're here with Robert Blake, owner of Solar Bear and also the nonprofit Native Sun, which are cool names I wish I would have thought of. But hey, we're going to be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
We've all seen the effects of wood smoke pollution this year, so before hosting that backyard bonfire, follow these simple tips to protect yourself, others, and the environment. Remember to give your neighbors a heads up before building a fire so those who find wood smoke bothersome can close their windows. Make sure to never burn wet or recently cut wood, other yard waste, plastic, or garbage. These things can be toxic when burned and create excess smoke. For more tips on how to burn responsibly, visit epa.gov/burnwise.
KFAI will broadcast Turtle Island Voices Rising on Monday, November 11th from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Turtle Island Voices Rising is a special day of Native American and Indigenous programming curated by KFAI hosts and community partners. Your favorite regular Monday programs will return on November 18th. More information about Turtle Island Voices Rising, including broadcast schedule, will be found at kfai.org.
This is Leonard Peltier. I am in Coleman 1 U.S. Penitentiary, and I'm listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
All right. Hey, we're here with Bob Blake of Solar Bear and Haley here. We're all three howling. That's hard for me to say. I had to really slow down and say howling. For wolves and with wolves. So, hey, we're talking a little political stuff, but we love to have Bob Blake on and talk a little bit about what's happening around Turtle Island with our with the Solar Bear, with the Solar News. So I think we should maybe transition into that.
Yeah, Robert. So this is a really interesting story here coming out of Tucson, Arizona. And, you know, it's basically the public Arizona Public Service, right, of Tucson Electric is going to add 20 gigawatts, okay, which is unbelievable amount of energy. Of renewables and storage. So what it sounds like to me, Robert, is that they're going to be retiring a coal plant out there, and they are going to replace it totally with renewables, with solar and batteries. Right. And now, and this is a utility, Robert, this is a utility that is going to do this. Now, let's take a look at what and I'm going to put this all together for you, but let's look at what's happening here in Minnesota with our utilities and how they're going to raise our electric rates and gas rates. Okay. Now, the reason for this, Robert, is because, you know, climate change is making it so, you know, for the future, so, you know, unpredictable, right? And so, you know, the utilities are basically saying, this is what we have to do in order for us to maintain a viable, you know, a business model. I think what we're going to see, Robert, in the future, and I'm willing to put $1,000 on this, okay? But oh. I think what we're going to see in the future is a lot of these utilities taking the route of Arizona Tucson Public Service Electric Cooperative, because they know too down there in Arizona that climate change is going to make the power unpredictable in the future. So, you know, they're investing in solar. They know that.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at kfai.org, non-commercial community powered radio.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic, please.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic.
Oh.